talk about movies, maybe a joke or two. It's pod on the cob. It's pod on the cob.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pod on the Cob. My name is Stephanie.
And I'm Tyler.
And we are here to talk about movies.
And corn.
Mostly corny movies.
Yeah, corny movies. Stephanie and I have a deep appreciation for movies. And we have a passing interest in corn.
In corn.
We'll explain a little bit more why we decided this was a good idea for a podcast. But all you really need to know getting into this was that this podcast is about movies and corn, and specifically movies with corn prominently featured. Is that fair?
Yeah. So if you like movies, you're in the right spot.
Yeah.
If you care or don't care about corn, you're still in the right spot.
I think so.
It doesn't really matter how you feel about corn. That's a side note.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's also really important.
But it's also really, really important. But it's not enough that if you don't like corn, you shouldn't stop listening.
Because that's understandable.
Because that would be understandable.
We're not going to fault you for that.
If you don't like movies, but you love corn, skip to the end. Because we're going to do it. Stick around.
You know, you might learn something.
I promise you're going to learn something.
You might learn something, and you might end up developing an appreciation for movies.
Or corn. Last Halloween, Stephanie and I did a bunch of movie viewings together. We did three in particular that were like back to back. And each of those three movies, they're all horror movies.
Yeah.
They're all very varying degrees of quality, from shockingly horrible to shockingly great, I would say. Okay. But Children of the Corn falls right in the middle for me. So we watched these three movies in a row, and they all involved corn. And this is where we came up with our idea for our amazing podcast of we should do a podcast about movies with corn in it.
We watched Children of the Corn, and we all watched it like our respective homes. And it was like a watch party, which is great. We finished the movie. We all had made our jokes, and it was great. And I'm like getting ready for bed. I think I was in bed at this point, and my phone rings, and it's Tyler. And I was like, Tyler, okay, I guess I better answer. This seems important.
Yeah, you should answer my calls.
So I pick up the phone, and he's like, hey, I have stroke of genius, and this is my idea. So here we are today.
And is it genius? There might have been a little hubris in that.
I might be adding in the word genius.
I hope.
You probably just were really humble about it.
I was probably really stoned when I said is my guess.
Extremely humble about it.
Extremely humble. This is the first episode of Pod on the Cob. And the first movie we are reviewing is, of course, this feels like the right one to do, is Children of the Corn from 1984.
Yeah, so Children of the Corn was released March 9th, 1984, so early 1984. Oh, and this episode's full of spoilers, so you haven't seen Children of the Corn, and if you don't want spoilers, maybe hit pause, go watch Children of the Corn, come back and hit play again. It's the 80s, things were great, things were rocking back in the 80s, lots of bright colors, lots of coke, I feel like, people partying.
Oversaturated, when you say colors, almost like the whole world of Children of the Corn is horribly oversaturated.
Yeah, but I feel like I hear from a lot of people who, because confession, I was not alive in the 80s, but I do hear people who were alive rave about the 80s for the most part.
So I actually want to talk about this later on too. This is an interesting point you're making right off the bat, because I've noticed a trend where people who haven't seen this since the 80s are really like, you watched Children of the Corn? Was it scary?
Yeah.
We're not going to spoil too much too early on about our feelings about the movie, but I'll spoil right now that it's not scary.
No. The tough thing about scary, though, is that it could be somewhat subjective.
It's totally subjective. Okay.
Yeah. Children of the Corn.
Yeah, Children of the Corn.
Released in theaters, contrary to my original thought upon watching this movie, thinking that it was a made-for-TV movie, which is just like a specific vibe. But hey, again, the 80s, I don't know.
You said that when we watched it. Oh my God, I can't believe this was released in theaters. The second one is also released in theaters. I do want to talk about that comment about it being made in, or looking like it was made for TV, because there are other things that came out this year that had lower budgets or like similar budgets that do not look like they were made for TV.
This might be why I thought it was made for TV, because obviously I first saw it on like a network TV as a kid.
Okay.
I'm just like watching Saturday morning or whatever, home from school, watching TV. Children of the Corn come on. I'm very intrigued by this movie. I put it on and I'm quite horrified and quite scared. Understandably so, as a child watching sure. Children of the Corn.
Yeah,
murderous I can get that. Children and freaky towns in the Midwest or whatever. So I was terrified. So flashback to a year ago, Halloween time. I was on this real like Stephen King kick, which I've been on for several years, reading Stephen King and just getting into those like Stephen King stories and that whole like universe and world and all that.
Mm-hmm. Had you watched it again before you recommended it to me?
I think I was like sick one, you know,
yeah.
And just kind of like sick in bed. And I'm like, what should I watch? And it was just like perusing movies. I'm like, hey, I remember this movie. I thought it was so freaky when I was like a kid or whatever.
Right.
And I put it on and I was like, wow, this is gold.
And so we watched it together in a watch party.
Yes.
And I have my thoughts on it, okay. Which we'll get into. But before we do that, what is Children of the Corn?
Yeah. Okay.
What
is so Children of the Corn is set in this fictional town in Nebraska. So it's this small town in Nebraska, the Midwest. It's a lot of cornfields, a lot of like plains. It's very flat. And there's this couple who are driving across country to the boyfriend, Bert.
Oh boy, we're going to talk about Bert. I've got a lot of thoughts
Bert
on Bert.
Just finished like med school and got a job. They're driving across country and him and his girlfriend are just like chatting and whatever. And they run into something on the road. They don't know what it is. One thing leads to another. Turns out it's a kid. But Bert, the keen eye that he has, notices that this kid's throat has been slit. So there's something nefarious going on. So they run into this kid. They have his body. They collect his body. I guess they want to get to the bottom of it. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting into too much detail.
So the way you're describing the movie is better than how the movie describes the movie, which is kind of my biggest critique of the movie. I guess we're going to start blending the storyline with our review. So the movie, basically, you're following that story that you're describing, but at the same time, there's another story happening where, from these kids' perspective, where there's a town that's been taken over by kids and they've killed all the adults.
Yeah.
Right? So you're seeing these two stories happen at once. The way you're describing the story is so much fucking better than how the movie tells the story, because the movie completely kills all the suspense by telling us all this other thing is happening at the same time.
So maybe to backtrack a little and just give an overall plot of the story of Children of the Corn is that small town Nebraska, something is living in the corn, some spirit or some entity, and the children have been possessed, so to speak. They have murdered anybody over the age of 18 in the town. And 3 years pass and there's like this, you know, they kind of have this hierarchy. There's a leader, there's a lieutenant, whatever, with these kids. No adults allowed in. The only adult who is allowed to be around is this mechanic guy who you are introduced to early in the movie.
He's providing them with fuel.
Yeah. Which is, I don't know, whatever.
One of the biggest issues in the movie, which I think that kind of both shines a spotlight on and also tries to get around, is that like, it doesn't make sense that any of these kids could live in this town for 3 years and there wouldn't be some kind of like...
They're just supposed to be that rural.
Right, I guess. Yeah.
And listen, it's the 80s. So.
That's like your number one excuse for this whole thing.
And when Stephen King wrote the short story, I think it was the 70s. So it's probably even like more dated.
We also need to confess that we did research, but we did not read the short story, which is
Stephen King, you're listening.
That's probably the best form of research we could have done. I think we both read the synopsis, so it's very different from the short story.
Yeah.
The movie is very... Like, it's reeking with Hollywood, like little scribbled notes in the script, right?
Yeah.
Like, for example, like Linda Hamilton's in it. Linda Hamilton is fresh off of Terminator. Same year. This movie looks like a TV movie. Mm-hmm. It has a $3 million budget. I looked it up, I think 3.5 or something. And Terminator had like $6 million budget or something. So it's double. It's way more. I'm not saying they're not like, I'm not saying they're the same budget, but my God, this movie looks so much fucking worse than Terminator. And not in the special effects or anything. It's just like, it's so bland looking. But anyways, yeah. Like Linda Hamilton's in both, and Linda Hamilton should be the lead in this movie.
Linda Hamilton's incredible.
She's great in this. She should be the lead.
Love Linda Hamilton.
And we get stuck with Bert.
Bert is not very likable.
I can't stand Bert. I'm just
going to come right out and say Bert is not very likable. Bert, he's very just like condescending.
Yeah.
I don't know. At one point, I made a note of this. He's like looking for... He's like wandering the town. He can't find people. He's like, where are the adults? Like, walking around town. And he comes upon this house that like looks like he saw movement inside or something suspicious. And he like knocks and he's like, hello. And he like shouts and he doesn't even skip a beat. Doesn't even wait for a response. He just fucking breaks down the door and just charges in. He's just like, hello. And just like breaks in.
Yeah, Bert's really relatable. He's useless. And Linda Hamilton, the whole movie, I don't remember her character's name. Linda Hamilton's
great.
Is it Vicky? It's Vicky. Is like giving him great advice the whole movie. She's handling the whole thing pretty rationally. And instead we get to follow dipshit around the town as he bumbles around and gets and knocks stuff over. Oh, he's like klutzy. I couldn't stand Bert.
And he's just like not quick to really understand what's happening. And let me again reiterate, he is an adult.
Yes, and they're children.
And they're all under 18. They're all children. So not sure exactly where the disconnect is for him to kind of like just be really slow to figure out what's happening.
They like to lean on the fact that he's a doctor a lot in it. The movie kind of kicks off with like, they hit a kid with their car, but the kid's already been... essentially murdered. His like throat slit already. And he hits a kid with his car and then he like flips him around all rough and he's tossed. It's like a dummy. He's like tossing him around. Yeah. It's like super.
He ends up putting him in his trunk, right?
Yeah. And he's in his trunk the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just sits in the trunk. There's a lot of like, it's a confusing movie for me because it feels like there's two movies that they filmed like simultaneously, because you've got this one storyline where it's following these two adults. They land in this town. They start to piece together that kids have like murdered all the adults. But all of that is ruined by this other plot line where you have a horrible kid narrator. I should mention that there are two lead children in the movie that are like two like good kids. One of them is your classic Stephen King character where she has like premonitions.
She shines.
It's very Stephen King. But the boy is a horrible narrator. I'm sorry to him.
Yeah.
But he's like this horrible narrator. And that whole, the way they like reveal all of that in that other plot line is so bad. And it's so like, it takes all the suspense out of the movie because there's another movie being filmed here where you're seeing them being watched in the cornfield. The Vicky and Bert are being watched in the cornfield and they're not showing who's watching them. And the guy at the mechanic shop you mentioned, he's being spied on. And they show like these little like point of view shots. But we know it's kids because we've seen this other storyline. All the suspense is completely deflated. And I know it's supposed to be creepy, they're kids, but knowing they're kids for me makes it like not creepy.
Yeah. I know. And I will say one thing I wrote down a lot when I was watching this movie and taking notes was that probably one of my favorite things about the movie, at least like as far as the cinematography goes, is I really do love how they use the POV in the movie.
Totally.
To at least attempt to add the suspense in it because it does... I don't know. It puts you in the corn.
It puts you in the rose. But you already know who it is who's watching them. So then you're just like, why keep it a mystery? It's a confusing. I watched it twice in the last year. I watched it last Halloween with you. And I watched it again for this review. Mm-hmm. You watched it with me both times.
Yeah.
I didn't like it the first time. And not in a fun, ironic way. I like straight up didn't like it. I have a list on my letterbox of like my worst movies of last year. And not worst, like I like some bad movies.
Yeah.
But I didn't like it even in that way last year. This second time around, I actually liked it a lot more.
Oh, good.
But I would still put it into the category. If I'm not 100% sure I think that Children of the Corn is like so bad it's good. I think it's just shy of getting that good level for me.
Yeah. I feel like they missed the mark a little bit too. And something interesting to add is that we've said this repeatedly, but this is based off a Stephen King short story.
Right.
And Stephen King actually wrote a screenplay for Children of the Corn.
Yeah.
And the director or the studio was like, nah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Stephen. We're going to go with this other guy's screenplay.
Yeah.
And we're just going to make that movie instead. And Stephen King's like, all right, right on.
And we got this.
I was reading that, and to be fair, I don't know that for sure that Stephen King's screenplay would have been much better, because I did read that one of the main reasons they didn't go for his screenplay was that the first 45 minutes of the film were Bert and Vicky arguing in the car.
Wow. Well, that does sound really good. Wow.
But it sounded like he didn't focus on like the kids, and there was no kids narrating the story, which was a little bit iffy.
More than a little bit. The movie starts off with this.
Me and my sister, Sarah, we were going to go. We didn't want to listen to Isaac. But we did anyways.
Dude, it's so bad. It's like the worst Private Eye movie. It's the worst film noir you've ever seen. The worst narrative. Yeah. It's so bad.
And it like flashes to those two because they're brother and sister.
Yeah.
And this is who we were talking about, the little girl who shines, which if you're not familiar with Stephen King, a lot of his stories and everything he writes is like in this same universe. He talks about like different realms and whatever. So I don't want to say it's the same world necessarily, but one common thing or one kind of thread through a lot of these stories is when people shine. And that basically just means that they're like psychic. They might have a vision of the future. They might be able to like read people's thoughts, or they might just have like this sense of what's going to happen. So these kids, and they're like dressed up in what we're to assume is like their mom and dad's clothes.
Yeah, there's
and
that.
And they're just like,
they're playing Monopoly,
playing games in the house. And they're not real clear, but as a viewer, we're expected, I think, to assume that they're just not really into it. They're not really into this like cult thing that Isaac started. They're not really into this whole cult religious corn man who walks between the rows.
Yeah.
Or he who walks between the rows, excuse me.
All the best things in the movie.
They're not really into it. And they're just like, we're just over here. Blah, blah, day to do.
Yeah. But basically they're not allowed to play loud music, and they play loud music and they get caught a bunch. And they don't, there isn't like a punishment for it, but they seem to be punishing kids for not doing certain things. Okay, let's talk about Isaac. For me, Isaac is the best thing in the whole movie. So like, okay, when I read a bunch of Letterboxd reviews after we watched it, and there are people who are like, he's obviously not a kid. So his acting is terrible. What? It was weird. And I was like, okay, so the person who plays Isaac, they aren't actually a kid.
When it was filmed.
Yeah, no. I think they have John Franklin. I did not know that going in.
Yeah.
I think they might have had a condition or something where they looked younger. I don't know the details on that. But they're great. And they do a great job of both feeling very adults and like above the kids, and feeling very childlike in a way that's...
I agree.
You know, there's a part in the movie, and Stephanie already warned you, this is rife with spoilers, but at the end of the movie, the two kind of powers in the Children of the Corn community are Malachi and Isaac. Malachi usurps Isaac at the end, and Isaac throws like a temper tantrum, and it's great because he totally feels like a kid. He doesn't feel like an adult at all. I was shocked to see how many people on Letterboxd were like, I was taken out of this by Isaac. Like, he was like, any scene he was in, I was like totally, like, that's when I was focusing.
Yeah. Taken out of this. If we were taken out of this by anyone, it was either Bert.
Yep.
Job, which is the little boy's name. The narrator.
Okay. I would have never guessed
Job,
that. Yeah.
Sarah is his little sister. They would be who probably would take me out of this, but Yeah, Isaac, I feel like Isaac was pretty solid. Malachi, he came in strong.
Malachi took me out of it in fun ways.
Yeah.
Malachi was like clearly a kid, clearly not an adult.
On the older side.
On the older side.
Pushing 18, which
we
find out later in the movie what happens when you turn 18.
What happens when you turn 18?
So our main character, Bert, at one point, maybe past halfway through the movie, he's running around town. He's doing like a tour of Gatlin.
Okay, so you talked about Gatlin. Gatlin is a fictional town in Nebraska. It shows up in a lot of Stephen King stories.
The stories he writes are set in similar, like Salem's Lot or...
Yeah, he has like fictional places.
Yeah, how those show up in a lot of his stories. But Gatlin, Nebraska in the movie is not actually filmed in Nebraska.
Okay.
The majority of the movie is filmed in Iowa.
Okay.
With some of it like filmed on lot in California.
Okay. Okay. I think I can picture, we actually have the movie playing with us in the room while we're doing this review on mute. We love it so much. We can't stop watching
it. Can't get enough.
And I feel like if I were to turn around and watch it in more detail, I think you could probably pick out where it's California.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I love that it's like, we're in Nebraska, but it's not Nebraska. I mean, full confession, I have never been to the Midwest, the Midwestern region in the United States.
You need to see some corn in real life.
I need to go and just like really fully immerse myself in some of these cornfields to put myself in those shoes.
I think so. I think that'd be a good call.
We'll just save that for another episode.
We'll do an episode straight from
the
cornfields.
We'll do a live episode.
Live from the cornfields.
Straight from the cornfields of Iowa. We won't go to Nebraska, though.
I'm not going. After this movie, I'm not going to Nebraska.
Nope.
Yeah, Gatlin.
And
a fictional Nebraska
pretty
town.
Pretty much all he finds is corn.
There's a lot of corn.
He's like, I'm at the school. Corn.
Yeah.
I'm at the church. Corn. I'm at the city hall. Corn.
Corn. Just corn overflowing cartoonishly windows.
Out of the hoods of cars.
Yeah,
just
everywhere.
Like thrown on the tied to the like lampposts in the streets.
Yeah.
Like, so at one point he storms into this building. I think it was a church actually. And
I think it is too.
There was a ceremony taking place. It seems like he doesn't really know what's happening, but he just charges in just like somewhat fearlessly, which
is very
note. These kids have weapons.
Oh, yeah.
They're like scythes and machetes and like farming equipment.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Still, they can hurt you if they attack you.
Totally. But Bert's whole MO the whole movie has
Bert's
been
just like
blindly jumping into situations.
Charge right in because he's the man.
He is
he
the
is
man.
The man.
He is the man. You gotta give him. You gotta give him that.
He charges into this ceremony. It is very sketchy looking. There is a young man, I'll call him a young man, holding like a knife or a dagger of sorts, and this young woman who's like performing the ceremony and a bunch of people sitting in the pews. Long story short, he's gonna die. He's about to turn 18. Bert's like, what are you doing? And they're like, this is our ceremony. Like, don't hate us because this is our beliefs. He's like, no, you're not allowed to do that.
You're not allowed to kill yourself because you're 18.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's, and then I think that's explored more in the short story. It's barely explored in this.
Yeah.
Malachi is in the short story, I think he like turns 18 and like does sacrifice himself.
Okay.
The short story has a dour ending.
Yeah, Stephen.
Which I love.
Love you, Stephen King, but yeah.
In the movie, Malachi is clearly played by someone who's like around that age.
Yeah.
And he's just giving it his all, isn't he? He's just acting his little heart out. And I was won over by Malachi by the end.
Yeah.
I was won over.
I mean, I'd say he took an acting class or two.
I think he took a couple acting classes.
I think he took a couple.
He was like, he was so into it that I kind of loved him.
Yeah.
But he's so like theater kid. Like it's so.
So kind of getting to the end of the movie here.
Yeah.
At some point, Bert and Vicky get separated, which is like rule number one in a horror movie.
I know.
Don't separate from
and it's
the
his
people
idea.
You're with.
She insists they don't. And it's
of
his
course
idea.
It's Bert's
he's
idea.
Terrible.
So they get separated. Vicky gets taken by the children. the kids.
Yeah.
The teens. Let's be fair. They're teens at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bert is just wandering around town or whatever. He bumbles around the town. Vicky gets taken. And Vicky's like in a dire situation. She's fully strung up on this cross. And like, they're gonna kill her. They're gonna sacrifice her. Bert's kind of just like, oh, yeah, my girlfriend. And this it seems like an afterthought that he like needs to go save her.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So he ends up stumbling upon their ceremony, and kind of an LOL moment for me watching this movie was him fighting. Again, these are teenagers.
Yes, but
Bert is easily in his 30s. He just finished med school.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to go work as a doctor. Like, he's not, whatever, that's beside the point as well. But he like full on tackles.
He gets in like a fist fight.
But then, so in my notes, I thought it was funny how I'm like, he beats up a kid, and I literally crossed out beats up and just rewrote slaps unconscious.
Yeah.
Because he ends up just slapping this kid until he sort of just like passes out.
Yeah.
But that's very Hollywood. That's very like film.
Totally. And it's like, also like, it's absurd that he's fighting a kid. So I think they were just trying to get past it
as quickly as possible. We don't need to focus too much on this. And then, one thing leads to another. They're like, hey, Malachi's like, hey, I want to be in charge now. Isaac, fuck you.
Right.
We're going to kill you now.
Right. They put him on a cross. Isaac's
like, how could you? Why would you do this? So they string him up on the cross. This is the first time we actually see the man he who walks behind the rose. Sorry, I keep saying man, but they don't ever say man.
They say he
who walks behind the rose.
Right. We see
it in a sense where the dirt is moving and.
Yeah, some grip is pulling on a rope and there's a thing
there's
under
like
the ground.
A sandbag.
And it's making dirt go up and it's great. I actually love it. I'm not even trying to make fun of it. I totally love it.
So he gets like summoned.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they meander through the middle part of the movie. And then at the end,
it's a slog.
It's over. At the end, all of this stuff, all these pieces fall into place and all this. And they like realize this is how we're supposed to defeat him. We have to burn the cornfield.
The way
like,
they learn how to kill he who walks behind the rose is the most Hollywood thing ever. Yeah. They find a cryptic note that's written by a cop who had died there.
Yes. Who the cop we find out or we infer.
Yeah.
That the cop was trying to stop the kids. He was that last sort of holdout of the town.
That's a good point. I guess I never thought about that before. He must have been.
I like really tried to think about it. And it's like the cop, they call him the Blue Man.
Yes.
But they show him and he's like a skeleton or a corpse
hanging on a,
but he's wearing a police uniform, cross. Which the classic, again, it's the 80s. So the classic cop outfit with like
a costume.
Blue. Yeah. It's like you got it at Party City. Blue button up with the hat.
Also, they know. Listen. Okay. Listen. Also, I get that they use a cryptic language the whole movie, like an archaic like language. But they know what a cop. They know what a cop is. They would like they call him the man in blue or the blue man or whatever.
They call him the blue man.
But like they're a bunch of kids. They would call him like Mr. Policeman.
We're supposed to believe they're like mega indoctrinated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And
yeah.
It's been 3 years, to be fair. So
that's
if
true.
They were five when they killed all the grown-ups, now they're eight.
That's a good point. I'm splitting
they
hairs.
They were 10.
I'm splitting
now
hairs.
Now they're 13.
But the cop left a cryptic note that doesn't just say, use the gasoline in the cornfield.
No.
He leaves an incredibly cryptic note.
Guess what he does?
It's like a say it.
He highlights a verse in the Bible. He highlights a verse in the Bible.
He does. That's embarrassing.
Again, cryptic.
Beyond cryptic.
I didn't even bother to take note of whatever this Bible verse was.
Yeah, I think it's from Revelation. I'm trying to remember now.
I don't know. But they somehow figure it out because Bert and Vicky are just really smart like that.
I think Vicky, to be fair, figures it
out.
Yeah.
Vicky saves the day.
Exactly, because like I've been rooting for her the whole movie. I think she figures it out, which is wonderful. And they do it. They light it on fire and they blow it up. And the movie ends with a big explosion.
Yeah, and we do see he who walks behind the rose. Sorry, I keep saying between. I don't know why.
It's a long name.
It just crisscrosses. The wires crisscross in my mind.
He who walks behind the rose. I have it written down.
Behind the rose. I know. And I even have HWBTR.
Well, that clears it up. That clears it up. That made it a lot easier.
They show the monster. They show that entity. He's like a static cloud.
A really bad special effect from the 80s.
Really brutal special effects. But they, again, like I said, at the end of the movie, kind of like all the cards are shown and then you're just like, right on.
Right on. Like, yeah. You're along for the ride at this point.
You're just laughing. The special effects. Oh boy. The field burns. It's a whole thing. They end up, Vicky and Bert end up kind of just like walking, sort of meandering themselves back to their car with little Job and Sarah in tow.
Mm-hmm.
They're now this like sweet little nuclear family.
They even make a really tasteless joke about how they are going to adopt the two kids. Maybe it's not a joke. Maybe they are going to adopt them, but it's so dark because it's like they don't know them at all.
No. And what if they have like family or something? Like,
right. They're just, like, it's weird.
Kidnap these children.
And they also, the very last scare of the movie is they get jumped in their car by, I think she's pregnant, by the way. So in the short story, the girl who jumps them at the end is Malachi's girlfriend, and she's pregnant with Malachi's baby.
Of course.
Because if there's one trope that Stephen King loves that we haven't talked about yet, it's underage sex. But we're not going to talk about that more because we want you to listen to this. But Stephen King loves underage sex in his stories, and it's weird.
And just like cringy female characters.
Yeah.
Let's be real. Yeah. And I'm a woman. I like Stephen King.
You love Stephen
King. To be fair.
You love Stephen
King. But whoo-wee. Yeah, and I laughed out loud at that last jump scare. Like, it's literally the last 3 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
They're like, everything's done. They're this and that. And they go to their car. They're like, we're going to get in our car. We're going to turn on our car. Oh, wait. Our entire car's full of corn.
Yeah, the car is full
of corn. Our engine is now corn.
Everything is filled with corn in this movie, which is why we wanted to talk about it and why it gave us the idea for
the
podcast.
It's
the
entire inspiration. But anyway, she jumps out and everyone's like,
they knock her out. And then they laugh about it,
they
and then they walk
it.
Away, and that's how the movie ends.
Okay, and I wrote the last line of the movie.
Okay, we should always do this, by
you
the way.
Hear what
yeah,
the what's, last
yes,
line
what's
is?
The last line?
It's spoken by Vicky, so Linda Hamilton,
mm-hmm, wonderful,
who we love, and she says she's with her boyfriend. Are they engaged?
I think they're engaged.
Her and Bert. And they've got their two new little kids who like they take in like little stray cats, and they're like, and Vicky goes, let's get the hell out of here.
Final line.
That's her last line. That's the last line in the whole movie.
That's an
fade
okay last line.
Fade to credits. Let's fade get the hell out of here.
That's how
on
I felt.
Foot. On foot, though.
Let's get the hell out of here is how I felt finishing the movie. I like the concept of this movie a lot because it ends up being true. It's a dumb concept, except for it ends up being accurate. And I think that's what makes it good. So what I mean by that is the kids are all worshiping a deity or a figurehead that exists in the cornfields called He Who Walks Behind the Rose, I want to say. At the start of the movie, it's just like this weird wacko religion thing.
It's kind of introduced as a cult at first.
Totally.
With Isaac at the helm.
100%.
And you sort of read it as like, oh, okay, this kid got like power hungry and convinced all these other little kids who are much younger, seemingly much younger than him, to just like murder all the adults. And that's kind of all we know.
Yeah.
And then we're further along, we're introduced to this entity.
Yeah, this entity that actually exists.
Yep.
It's not made up.
Nope.
Isaac's not crazy. And there's something about that. Well, okay, he's crazy, he's crazy, but he's not wrong. There is a thing living in the cornfields.
Yes.
And it is, and I think for me, that's the thing in the movie that works the best. I love that. I love that there's actually like truth to his weird wacko beliefs. I think the movie could have worked on just fine on its own if it was like about like belief and how belief causes you to do crazy things. But I just love that it ends up being true. Something about that really works for me. I don't know. I've always really liked that being the twist. It's not really a twist. It's like they just kind of, it's just
like confirmation.
It's real. Yeah. It's confirmed. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not really introduced as the viewer of this movie. You're just watching and you're like, man, these kids are crazy. And then there's brief mentions of He Who Walks Behind the Rose.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really introduce too much lore behind Gatlin and the kids and all and the man who walks behind the rose and all of that.
Yeah.
Where when you first, the like opening credits of the movie are, is it just a series of children's drawings?
Yeah.
Which are done by Sarah because she's predicting.
She's shining. Yeah. Like you
she's
said.
Predicting kind of this, basically the movie, the events of the movie. So she's showing adults entering town and them being like sacrificed on this cross and all this stuff happening. So I don't know if we're supposed to believe that this has been foretold somehow.
Yeah, they don't. It's a mess.
And it's just a setup for, it's one of those things that stories do a lot of, like, this was fate. This was meant to be. There was no getting around this series of events.
I guess. It's weird, right? Because if it's very like, Stephen King likes these concepts of like seeing the future, children, and the impact of, like, you know, like the questioning innocence and stuff. These are all very like Stephen King themes, but the movie doesn't make any effort to like flesh any of them out. So like, to your point, it's like, we don't really know why Sarah can see the future. They never explain
it. And she doesn't really do it much throughout the movie.
And it never helps.
It certainly never helps.
Because there's this thing where it's like, you could kind of get, like, it'd be kind of neat if, like, maybe it was avoidable. Like, she, like, tells you something that's going to happen and, like, you can use it to an advantage. But it never helps. It doesn't have an impact. I think at the very start of the movie, the very first scene is a bunch of people coming out of a church. And on the church marquee, it says, I don't think they call them marquees, but on the church marquee, in the big dazzling lights of the church, it says something like, they're in a drought.
Corn drought.
Corn drought.
I'm pretty sure it is just those two words.
Corn. Is that what you wrote down? Did you write it down? Corn drought. Yes, you did write it down. Wow. So it says corn drought. First note of the movie. Corn drought. So I think in the short story, I think the implication is like, by sacrificing the adult, by sacrificing anybody, but specifically adults, the corn will grow.
They were trying to appease this entity who was dwelling in the cornfields.
Yeah.
And by to appease this entity, they had to kill all the grownups, anyone over 18, which is, I love that. That's like so American, because age of, you're an adult, but like what it. It's just funny. But anyways, besides the point.
No, I laughed at that too.
It's like 18. Once you turn 18, you're too old.
The thing now behind the rose nose.
Official adult. Yeah.
Especially in the 80s where it was like much more arbitrary.
Seriously.
And Nebraska. I don't know I wonder what they're. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're from Nebraska and you were alive in the 80s, maybe you have some insight.
Yeah. Email us. I actually created an email address. podonthecob@gmail.com. We like to talk about movies and we like to talk about, like, any form of media. I think we're open-minded. The point, of course, is to do it about things that involve corn. So rather than rating the movie, like giving it some kind of like rating of like how good or bad a movie it is.
Which I actually did write down the ratings from a few sites. Do you want to guess or did you see
I think it? I saw them.
Okay, so Rotten Tomato gave it 39%.
Okay, that's about right.
IMDb 5.6 out of 10.
That's a little high.
So that would be what, 56%?
Something like that. Okay, so when I rated this on Letterboxd, I gave it 2 out of 5 stars. In my mind, I gave it a 4 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I probably would do the same.
The first time I watched it?
You gave it like a 1?
I gave it like a 1.
Like a half.
I gave it a 1.
Like a half a star.
I've softened toward Children of the Corn. Do we recommend Children of the Corn?
Definitely recommend.
I think it's one watch.
It's tough to recommend because you and I share similar sort of silly, like we like silly film. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, because to me, and I don't want to get like too existential or anything, but like, it's like an art and it can be fun and not everything has to be serious. And yes, we can critique things, but it's also like, when you watch media, when you watch movies, TV, listen to music, listen to podcasts, like you're meant to enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
That's
it's entertainment.
It's entertainment.
Yeah.
And this movie I'd say is chock full of entertainment. Maybe you need to watch it with a buddy so you can like Mystery Science 3000 it.
Yes.
Where you're like making jokes all the time.
It helps.
Which helps, but I would recommend it. TBH, dude, I'd recommend it, to be honest.
I'm going to give it like a loose recommendation. Okay. I think it's like a horror classic. I think everyone knows the name. I think a lot of people think it's Village of the Damned, which is another movie about like a small town with like kids who kill adults.
Okay.
People, I feel like when I was a kid, I remember seeing the covers of both of these movies at the video store. Back in my day, when I went to the video store,
Blockbuster
and Hollywood Video. But I think it's one of those ones where it's like, if you like horror movies, it's a classic. You should see it. For me, I have a deep love of good, bad movie or bad, good movies, I should say. And I know you do too, because we watch most of them together. For me, it really toes the line of being bad, good, but it doesn't ever fully go into the territory enough for me where I'm like frothing to see it again.
For sure.
But I think people should see it. Yeah. I'm hoping the sequels go. I hope the sequels become more over the top and goofy.
Yes.
That's my big hope.
So I've been saving this.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
I was looking at like what the how did people receive this movie in the 80s? Like, what was the critical response to this movie?
Right.
And my favorite quote I read was from this movie critic, and he was like, the only thing walking between the rows or behind the rose was the people fleeing the theater once the movie was over.
That's really good. That's really good. There's more thought in that joke than there is in the entire script.
And I was like, hey, he's right.
He's right.
He's fully right. At the end of it all, my kind of final thoughts was like, it was mostly just a funny movie.
Yeah.
It was like pretty dated.
It's aged really badly. And again, I want to say, we talked about this at the very start. It's aged badly and it's easy to pin it on the year, but it came out the same year as some movies that really look good still.
And that like held up.
Yeah. Okay. I made a comparison earlier. I said the Terminator, because Linda Hamilton's in both, right? Yeah. So I said, I compared this to the Terminator, but to be fair, the Terminator had a higher budget. So let's compare it to another movie that came out in 1984, another movie in the same genre, and another movie that had a lower budget.
Okay.
1984 is the same year that Nightmare on Elm Street came out. And Nightmare on Elm Street totally holds up.
Yeah.
Like, I watched it a couple years ago. I haven't seen it for like maybe 2 years, but I watched it like 2 years ago. It fully holds up. It still looks good. It's interesting. It's a satisfying movie. Like, it all pays off at the end. It has a lot of thought put into it. So like, I don't know. Like, for me, when I say that this one is just like towing that line of being good, bad, it's like, I can't blame it on the budget and I can't blame it on the year. Something about this one is just not, it just doesn't stick the landing for me.
For sure.
But listen, at Pod on the Cob, what we care about more than the movie's quality is the quality of the usage of the corn in the movie.
This is the pinnacle. This is sort of, you know, it's about.
If you've stuck around this long, you've made it to the point of the podcast, which is, we are going to rate Children of the Corn based on the use of corn. And what I mean by that, to be clear, is, how did the corn factor into the movie in a meaningful way? How is corn uniquely used in the movie? And how prominent was corn in the movie? So we're going to rate this not based on how good it was or how much we loved watching it. We're going to rate it on the corn. So I have thoughts on this, but Stephanie, you kick us off. What are we doing? What do we decide? 5 cobs?
Yeah, we're going to go 5 cobs.
So our rating scale is cobs.
Yeah.
It's anything between 0 and 5.
And 0 and 5 cobs, 5 being the most corn
imaginable.
corn cobulus.
It's corn of copious. There's another podcast with that name already. I looked it up. How many cobs are you giving to Children of the Corn?
It's tough for me. This one's tough because it's the first, so I really want to give it a high rating because I also took a few specific notes to, like, on legitimately the use of corn. Like,
yeah.
At one point there was a knife where the hilt of the knife was corn.
Yep. I have that note.
Me too. The bowl, they had this like bowl they were drinking out of during the ceremony, was made of corn.
Yeah. We have crucifixes made of corn.
Crucifixes made of corn.
Both miniature crucifixes and full-blown human-sized crucifixes made of corn. We have corn pouring out of almost every single set on the entire movie.
Anywhere where you could put something, they put corn.
Yeah, yeah.
Out
yeah.
of win- we already said this, out of windows, out of mailboxes, out of
cars.
Anything.
They're doing everything they're doing for corn.
Yeah.
The monster in the movie lives in the corn. Yep. So what's your number? How many cobs?
Gosh, I'm just going to go for it. Give it a 5 out of 5 cobs.
I think you're going to be delighted to find out that I too gave Children of the Corn 5 out of 5 cobs.
Yeah.
I've purposefully withheld from reading my notes out loud, but I'm going to read this one because this is what I wrote. Holy shit, how could we ever top this?
Yeah.
This movie is literally overflowing with corn.
Yeah.
It's actually popping out of all the windows. There's big and little corn crucifixes. The kids are trying to maybe like end a drought in their cornfields or something. Yeah, this movie's it's a 5 out of 5. It's going to be hard to top our first episode in terms of corn usage.
Well, at one point, the corn, like the stalks, did we decide that's what they're called?
Yeah, I think so.
Bert, so this is the end of the movie when they're in that final battle with the entity. He like falls over or whatever, of course, in the final chase, and he gets wrapped up like in the corn stalks. Like, so it actually becomes the corn, the physical corn comes alive and ties him up. And he has to cut himself out. A lot of the corn, because it's very ceremonial. It's what their whole religion's based on.
Of course it is. It's a corn-based religion. 5 out of 5. I agree. I think, like, it's going to be hard to top. But yeah, that's Children of the Corn.
Yeah. So what was your, if you had to pick one or two, like, your favorite things that you actually loved?
Actually loved?
Yeah.
Okay. My favorite things that I actually loved in this are, I actually love... I think I really love the concept. I think it's a fun concept. Like, I like the theme of it being about like religious fanaticism and how quickly people will follow a leader that, you know, even willing to do horrible things just because this person tells them to. And again, I said it earlier, but I like that it's not purposeless. Like, I like that the kids, I mean, listen, if I was 8 years old and you told me there's a monster living in the cornfields and I should kill my parents and kill all the adults, but then I see the monster in the cornfields and I think that's genuinely the right thing to do, then yeah, I think I'm going to follow that religion, right? I wouldn't kill my parents. Mom and Dad, I love you. I wouldn't kill you. I'd kill the other adults.
Yeah.
And then the other good I have written down is I like some of the characters a lot. I liked Isaac a ton. I liked Linda Hamilton a ton, Vicky, and I just ended up loving Malachi because I thought he was absolutely hysterical. So those are my goods. What about you? What are your goods?
Okay. I kind of mentioned it earlier. I really did like the usage of like the point of view, like camera footage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. Something about it kind of added to it being sort of eerie and sort of like, you know, you touched on it of like someone's watching.
Yeah.
Or something is there. And that feeling creeps me out a little bit. I also really loved, and I haven't mentioned this yet, I actually really loved parts of the soundtrack.
Ooh, because okay. I don't remember it.
It's the little kid's choir. It's like kind of church choir-y.
I forgot about this.
With the little kid, and it's during, they use it really well to add to suspense, where typically, like, I think the first time it's featured is like the first death, which is the kid where they murder the kid, mm-hmm. and he stumbles out into the road in front of the car.
The catalyst of the story.
Yeah, the car. And then with the mechanic and his dog, which we briefly touched on. But anyways, it's used strategically throughout the film. I feel like it was used really well and it was like fun. I'm like a choir kid myself. I freaking loved like singing in my little like choir growing up.
You're a Children of the Corn.
I am a child of
the corn. You're a child of the corn.
If there was one thing this film needed more to in order to fall under horror genre, maybe to just be a little scarier, to be a little creepier. And I do think that soundtrack or that the usage of the children's choir, it sort of added to the creepiness.
No, I forgot about the soundtrack, but I'm glad you mentioned it. That it's pretty good. And it does have a good atmosphere to it. Okay, so we talked about the things we liked, bottom two things in this. And they can't be like good, bad things, like things that genuinely you just didn't like.
Things that I genuinely didn't like. I genuinely didn't like some of the kid acting.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in with you and say that's one of mine. The
kid narrating, and no hate on you, little Job actor, if
no,
you're listening.
You're older than us now, but yes. Yeah.
But, you know, the last like 20 minutes of the movie, he's wearing a vest.
Yeah. Oh, that was so funny.
The like sleeve on one of the sides of his vest, like I'm guessing it like ripped or something. And
there's a plot point around it. Linda Hamilton tears it and uses it as a bandage on Bert.
Oh my God.
It happens in the movie. That. Yeah. She tears it off. It's so weird.
But then you'd think little kid or Linda Hamilton or somebody would right. say, little Joe, take the vest off.
You can take the vest off now. You don't
need to fight the rest of the movie with the kid is visibly, I feel like he received direction. He must have received direction that he should try to keep the vest on him.
I don't know. I wonder.
And he's he keeps moving his arm and his shoulder in a weird way, very unnatural looking way on screen.
Yeah.
To keep this costume in place where it doesn't really add anything and it takes you out of the moment.
It's totally distracting.
So I didn't love the child acting.
No, I'm going to agree with you on that. Malachi is the extent of the bad child acting I can handle.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, you know, arguably a teen.
I just loved his effort.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to so jump. That's one of my two. That's one of my two as well. So I'll make it easy and just say that's one of mine.
Two is just honestly Bert.
Like, yeah, Bert's terrible.
Bert kind of sucked as a character. And I don't know. Again, we didn't read Stephen King's short story, so I can't attest to the source material for Bert and mm-hmm. his character. But I have read plenty. I've read a decent amount of Stephen King. And
yeah.
And I know how Stephen King writes characters. And right. I'm not surprised that Bert reads the way he does on screen. It does come off as a Stephen King male protagonist, like just yeah. to be honest about it. Again, no hate against Stephen King. That kind of oftentimes I feel like that adds to the eeriness and the unsettling plot points in Stephen King stories. Acting. What about you?
I'm going to go kid acting for one of mine. That was
okay, so we share one.
I share that one with you. That like the narration is so bad. And there's a whole scene where they're like playing Monopoly and they're dressed like grown-ups. And I'm just like, oh my God, I just felt like I was watching like Casper, A Spirited Beginning or something. I hated it so much.
You're watching like Disney Channel. Or
yeah,
something.
Not in a good, bad way. Like I just hated it. The other thing about it for me was, I've talked about it a little bit, but there's a really suspenseful movie buried in this movie where you're following the adults and it's being slowly like unveiled to you that what's going on in the town is about kids. There's a movie buried in here somewhere where that's what's happening. But unfortunately, like the way that this movie's presented, I just feel like I've talked about it a bit already, so I won't like belabor the point. But to me, it's just like, there's no suspense in this. Like it's all sucked out. And all those POV shots that you were talking about that you love, I love them too. I would love them so much more if they were truly like mysteries.
They give away too much
right away. Like the first scene right away.
Because the opening scene is the kids murdering the girls.
And if that was the whole movie, I would have been totally okay with that. Like if the whole movie was just like the schlock of the kids, like putting the guy's hand into the meat grinder and all this horrible.
Yeah, in the deli.
Yeah, in the deli. Like I would have been okay with that. And I think maybe at the end of the day, the biggest sin for me is I don't think it's a very scary movie.
Yeah.
And it's bloodless. They don't show a lot. And I remember watching this with my aunt and uncle, and they were both like, this is going to scare the shit out of you.
Wait, how old were you when you watched
it? I was out of college.
Oh, okay.
I was like in my 20s.
And they thought it was going to scare the shit out of you.
And I kind of said this at the start of the episode, but to me, there's a nostalgia to this movie that is really out of whack with the actual movie. People remember it really differently. They think it's scarier than it is. I've just noticed this with people I've talked to. I've had a lot of people that are a little older than me. When I told them we were doing this and I told them we were watching this, I've had a lot of reactions from people where they're like, oh my gosh, that scared me so bad when I was a kid. That's a scary movie. And yeah. It probably did scare you when you were a kid.
Yeah.
But oh my God, I just can't even imagine being scared of this now. Even Casey, like my partner, we watched this together. She was kind of scared because Casey, I love you, but you're scared of everything. But like, even she was like, she's seen it twice. I don't know. It's just bloodless and not scary. And I think for me, that's like its biggest sin.
Okay. So that it's supposed to be a horror movie and it's not horrifying.
The concept is horrifying.
The execution didn't stick the landing.
Yeah. But I'm sure the sequels will. The countless sequels.
Yeah,
I'm sure
they will. And I do want to say that we're not poo-pooing or hating on any person who played a hand in creating this movie.
We would never.
We appreciate Thank everybody's you. Great effort.
Thank you for the hard work you put into this.
We're happy to even have the opportunity to watch and then pick apart a movie like this.
Mercilessly eviscerate your hard work.
Yeah. So we do want to say thank you.
We are very grateful to you. We have a ton of experience making movies in the sense that we watch a lot of movies.
We watch a lot of movies and talk endlessly about them and
annoy our partners endlessly about how much we talk about them. So we're qualified to eviscerate your hard
work.
We're
highly qualified.
Okay, so that's Children of the Corn, and that's the first episode of Pod in the Cob. Yeah. Just cut off the stalk out of the cornfield and just thrown right into your ears, I think. Yeah.
I was going to say, throw it right on the fire and watch it pop, dude.
Just watch it pop.
Watch that corn pop.
We are going to do more of these. We're not going to do like all the Children of the Corn movies, I think, in order, right? Because it's like, I don't think a mortal person could do that. That's too much Children of the Corn.
Yeah. And we don't want to drive our listeners away.
No, but we're going to do something. It'll probably be a horror movie because it probably will still come out around Halloween season. Yeah.
And if you have a recommendation, feel free to send it in. We're open to recommendations.
100%. Our email is podonthecob@gmail.com. Email us ideas for future episodes or...
We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Again, this was Pod on the Cob. My name's Stephanie.
And I'm Tyler.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Go watch Children of the Corn or don't. I don't think it matters.
We need like a catchphrase.
Yeah.
Cob on.
Keep on cobbin'.
Keep the corn flowing.
Keep the corn a poppin'.
Keep the corn a poppin'.
Ooh, there's a movie on our list called Corn a Poppin' that I put on the list. So.
Cornucopia. There's a play on words there.
We've got something. Send us ideas for punny catchphrases to end our show with.
If you're a really genius writer, we could probably ask your wife, who's actually a pretty decent writer.
Yeah. Stephen King, are you out there?
Stephen King, if you are listening, please feel free to reach out to us. Again, our email is podonthecob@gmail.com.
Yeah, Stephen, we want to hear from you.
Stephen, we love you. We'd love to have you on the show.
We'd love to have you on the show, Stephen.
We'd have you as our first guest.
Yeah.
And our last.
You can come talk to us about Sharks of the Corn, the movie I found on Letterboxd. Okay, bye!
Bye!
Bye.